Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is October 4, 2018, a sunny and relatively mild fall day here in Middle Tennessee. There's been a lot of dialogue these days about the importance of buying local, eating local, supporting local merchants and producers. We don't always have to rely on the Central Valley of California for all of our fruits and vegetables. Locally produced fruits and vegetables often are tastier because the local growers can utilize varieties that are not viable for shipping on a nationwide basis. Obviously, locally produced products have a smaller carbon footprint, and by supporting local producers, you're supporting local economies. Well, along those lines here in Tennessee today, there is a very important and interesting development in the production of grapes and wine. My guest today is a new friend, Adam Acampora. He is the executive director of the Tennessee Farm and Wine Growers Association. How's that for a dream job? He is here today to talk about the growth of this small industry and about an event that they have coming up November 10 at the Nashville Farmers Market. And so I hope you'll enjoy today's interview with Adam Acampora, and I hope you'll attend the November 10 event. Adam Acampora, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Yeah, Mark, thanks for having me.
Adam, tell us the nature of your job. What is your title and what do you do?
So I am the executive director of the Tennessee Farm Wine Growers Alliance. I'm actually the first director the organization has had. I've been on the job for about 6 months now. Okay. But we are the 501c6 trade organization that represents the grape and wine industry in the state of Tennessee.
And you've been there about 6 months, but you had some work in that industry here in Tennessee before taking that job.
I did. I spent about 3 years with Natchez Hills Vineyard and Winery. They're located down in Hampshire, Tennessee.
Okay.
And it acquainted me with some of the challenges that we face as an industry in the state. And really, when the opportunity arose to kind of help develop the bigger industry picture, I was really excited to kind of throw my hat in the ring.
It just sounds terrific fun. I saw, and the reason I reached out to you is a promotion for an upcoming event came across my Facebook page, and I want to give right here at the outset an opportunity for you to promote that. I know it's November the 10th.
It is.
At the Nashville Farmers Market. Yeah. Tell us what's going on there.
So SIPTN, SIP Tennessee, it is Nashville's only all Tennessee wine festival. Most wine festivals that happen and all food festivals that happen in Nashville are typically distributor run. So you get California wine, Argentina wine. This is 100% wineries from around the state of Tennessee that come to the Nashville Farmers Market. Guests are able to come in, taste wines, buy bottles of Tennessee wine, typically at deep discounts. The market house is going to be open with all the food vendors inside. We'll have lots of arts and crafts vendors on the outside too. And you're able to come enjoy the farmer's market just like you normally would on a Saturday. And that was really important to us when our partnership with the farmer's market is kind of reinforcing and making sure that, you know, we're grown here in Tennessee, produced here in Tennessee, and kind of link that together. So
November 10th. 11 in the morning?
11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Okay.
There'll be music. Okay. Tickets are on sale right now at siptn.com. Okay. Their early bird tickets go on until the October 9th. They're only $45. After the 9th, they go to $55.
Okay.
We also have a VIP experience for $125. You actually get some food, more casual seating, and our reserve bar. So typically wines that we bring to wine festivals, the wineries bring, are normally their best sellers.
Okay.
Not always the $40, $50 bottle of reserve. It's been sitting in the cellar for, you know, the past 3-4 years.
So there'll be an opportunity for VIPs to taste those reserved bottles.
Yep.
Okay.
Some of the ports and things like that as well.
So where do people find tickets for this?
SIPTN.com.
Okay.
It's also on TennesseeWines.com. You can go there and find the link back on Facebook, on the Tennessee Wines Facebook page.
Okay.
And then on Eventbrite. So everything's through Eventbrite.
All right. Well, we'll run through those details again before we check out. But I plan to go. I think that'll be a really fun thing and a good thing to support a growing industry in Tennessee, and so let's talk about that just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, in preparation for today, I got out my old copy of the Nat Resources of Tennessee, the Killer Brew classic book, and he has a chapter on growing grapes, and he talks about the history of the grape industry back into the 1820s, 1830s. Tell us what you know about that.
You know, it's kind of shocking because, you know, prior to Prohibition, we were the fourth largest producer of grapes in the United States. You know, German settlers in the 1700s came through and, you know, above Knox County planted the vines, because typically when new settlers came through, no matter where you were from Europe, you brought vines with you. It was just kind of, you brought your kids, you brought, you know, your Bible, you brought your vines.
So you mentioned it, I'm not going to interrupt you much, but
yeah.
You mentioned above Knox County. So I see that Killebrew talks about a Maynardsville area and planting there, and there's a Maynardsville vineyard up there now, isn't there?
I believe there is. It's not a functioning winery up there, but I think there's some growing going on up there.
Okay, all right.
You know, we've got guys in near Blaine, Tennessee. We've got guys over in Fentress County, really kind of spread out all in that, you know, that area.
All right, we'll go back to the history. I interrupted.
Yeah. Good. But yeah, so Tennessee, you know, it was very popular for us, and unfortunately, you know, we were an early adopter of Prohibition, and 1907 things started to dry up for us, and we didn't actually get our first commercial crush again until 1980. So we didn't start planting commercial vineyards again until the mid 70s, and you think about that, 1907 till the mid-1970s, late 1970s, there's an entire generation of farmers that don't know how to grow grapes. You know, right. We have winemakers that don't know how to make wine, you know, at least when we started to get back into it.
Now, where were the first modern era grapes grown?
So it was a lot of home winemaking going on. You know, Judge Beach of Beach Haven Winery, Faye Wheeler, who Faye actually started Highland Manor Winery, which was the first registered winery in the state of Tennessee, and our first commercial crush.
So where's that?
That's Fentress County, which is still a dry county.
Okay.
Fentress
is way north central, up near. Up near Pickett State Park and up in that area.
Yeah, so if you get off Highway 40 where Crossville is, like where Stonehouse has their location, you head 25 miles north.
Right, Jamestown, Tennessee.
Jamestown area, areas. Yeah.
Right. And Judge Beach, it was the county executive in Montgomery County, Clarksville.
Yes.
And he started a vineyard.
So he did. And Faye and Judge Beach and a few other individuals were part of an organization called the TVOS, Tennessee Viticulture and Enology Society. And they're still around today. They are 100%, you know, hobbyist home winemakers, people that have interest in growing grapes. You know, maybe they're growing something in their backyard. And my organization, the TFWA, kind of sprung from that. You know, the TVOS started, and after commercial industry seemed to be viable again in 82, the same gentleman that started the TVOS started the TFWA, and really tried to work with Department of Ag and legislators to try to loosen up some of the restrictions that were still around from Prohibition, and, you know, make it possible to produce, you know, 10,000 gallons, 20,000 gallons, things like that. So really, it's been a progression over the past, you know, 30 years.
So what were the impediments or the practical or legal impediments to growing more than that?
Well, at first it was just a matter of the amount of end product you can create, the wine.
Okay. And so there's no prohibition in growing grapes.
There's no prohibition in growing grapes.
Right.
And, you know, we do grow a lot of table grapes, but the majority, I want to say like 85% of grapes are grown, are really used for wine consumption as opposed to table grapes. Because you're only going to sell so many pounds of, you know, table grape.
So state government has to regulate wine production.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it is an alcoholic product,
sure,
of course. But,
sure.
you know, unlike other alcoholic products, you know, beer, whiskey, you can kind of pull your your materials from anywhere to make that product.
Right.
Wine really is a showcase of the land. You know, and what we're going through now is no different than what California went through, what France went through. We're just, you know, a few years behind.
Early on.
But we're learning that, you know, this type of varietal may do well in, you know, Knox County area, but it doesn't do so well when you're down in Middle Tennessee, you know, in the valley.
Right.
You know, there's a white squirrel vineyard out in Kenton, out in West Tennessee. He's had a lot of success with Syrah, which doesn't really do well anywhere else in the state. But because of the soil, and we're guessing it's the sand in the soil, that there's good drainage, and he's able to produce a European Vinus vinifera style grape.
Wow. And that's in Shelby County.
Uh-huh.
Wow. How many vineyards do we have now?
How many vineyards? It's a good question. So we have a lot of hobby growers.
All right.
So
we're putting those
three
aside,
acres and less.
Yeah.
We've got 53 commercial vineyards are part of my association.
Okay.
And we've got 46 of the 66 wineries part of my association. So we make up probably about 70% of the industry. We're producing maybe 560 acres of grape grown of winemaking grapes in the state right now, which is about 1,200 shy from where I'd like to see us.
Okay.
And there was some interesting studies done by UT's Ag Extension a few years ago, looking over the viability and profitability of grapes in the state and doing some census work, and they were looking at the deficiencies that we had then when there were only 25 wineries, and now that there's 66 wineries and it's so much more prevalent, you know, we need at least another 1,200 acres of grapes being grown in the state.
So that brings me to this question. Let's talk about the nature of the industry. I mean, you have these so-called wineries, some of which don't raise any grapes themselves at all.
Some of them, yeah, correct.
Right.
Correct.
And how does that work?
So a lot of them are actually buying fruit. A lot of the guys in Pigeon Forge area, Hillside Winery, Millbridge Winery, you know, they are contracting with commercial growers in East Tennessee.
Okay.
So the Collier Wine Group is a collective of five wineries, and they actually work with 33 vineyards out in East Tennessee to actually get their fruit every year and meets a certain quality, looking for a certain varietal to produce the wine they want to produce.
Okay.
We also have what's called a farm winery, which to me is a really good progression for a grower to become to increase their sales and their revenue channels a little bit, and then become a full-fledged winery. And Cellar 53 is a great example of this.
Now, where's that?
They are in Brush Creek, so in between kind of here and Baxter, or here in Cookeville. And they started out as a vineyard, and they were producing grapes just for Arrington. And everyone has kind of heard of Arrington.
Vineyard.
They're probably our most famous winery in the state right now. But they were producing grapes, and after a while they said, you know, hey, we're going to contract Arrington to do what's called a custom crush. So their fruit from their vineyard would be sent to a winery facility to be crushed, and then comes back to them, and they could sell that wine at it. So Cellar 53 in Brush Creek, again, they started out as a grower, just producing for Arrington. Then they contracted with Arrington to start taking some of their fruit and turning it into wine that they could then sell from their farm store.
Okay.
So it's a great way for a farm to start getting some extra revenue, because you may say sell a pound of your fruit for $1, but you're going to sell that bottle of wine for $15, and you get a little more back into the farm.
Sure.
And about 3-4 years ago, they became a full-fledged winery, so they're actually producing their own wine now.
Okay.
Say
the name of that outfit again.
Cellar 53.
And they're in?
Brush Creek.
Brush Creek.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're not... They're not the exemption. The farm winery law just came into effect in the past 10 years or so. And from a business perspective, it makes the best sense for a grower to go down that path. Because unless you're a true commercial grower, and I'm talking you're doing 20 acres, the economics aren't always there.
Okay.
So when you're producing less than that, progressing into a full-fledged winery is kind of the best course of action. And from a purity standpoint, as a winemaker, you know, you want to make sure that you have the best fruit for the best color, best taste, best, you know, sugar quality. And the only way to really do that, yes, you can contract someone to do that, but unless you're going out to the vineyard and looking at what's happening on that land.
So who are the people that are opening these shops out there on the landscape?
Crazy passionate people.
All right.
You know, there are some growers. We have a lot of engineers getting into it, a lot of retired military getting involved in it. And it's because they have a passion for what wine is, what grapes are, and the fact that when you get into this industry, you're not just one thing. You're a lot of things. I mean, you need to be a farmer, first and foremost. You need to be able to work the land that you're on. You need to understand the challenges that happen with certain varietals in your region. You get to play around with geology. You get to play around with weather forecasting. There's a lot of management elements for the vineyard as well, because unlike other crops that are kind of cash crops and you kind of set it and forget it, once spring and bud break happens, you are out in those vines. If you're not touching them 3 times a week, there's probably something wrong. So you're constantly, hands-on in the vineyard.
So do we have any people that are getting out of tobacco and into wine, or getting out of cotton and getting into wine, or any kind of that thing going on?
I hope so.
Okay.
And that's part of my goal and my mission, is really to try to start introducing grape growing as a viable alternative or offset to what a property is already creating. I know tobacco has been hit really hard, and there's potential for a good return on investment converting into grapes. It's a great value-added crop. Next to cigars, wine is like the biggest value-added product you can create from a piece of agriculture.
Right. The bottom land, plots of land, the loamy soil, the sorts of places where they would grow tobacco are not necessarily the best places to grow grapes.
Doesn't always work. Yeah. I am a big fan of some of the cattle area we have in East Tennessee. I think, even the dairy industry has kind of been hit pretty hard in the past few years. So I think that's definitely a viable option, looking at some of the dairy land out in East Tennessee. The bottom of the valleys aren't the greatest.
Right.
Unlike tomatoes or other fruits you might have, grapes want to struggle. They don't want to have all this moisture, and we have a lot of moisture here.
Right.
And it makes it challenging. And we're susceptible to certain things like certain rots and mildews that they don't have in other grape growing regions.
Yeah, no, I'm a home gardener and have tried years ago to grow some grapes. And I think I just bought some vines from one of the catalogs, mm-hmm. And they were promoted as being resistant to disease, and no, they certainly were not. I don't think I got any grapes, and had to spray an awful lot of fungicide in order to get anything at all.
And we have a challenge, because sometimes the grapes that grow well don't make great wine. We grow a lot of Native American varietals.
Tell us more about that. What are those varietals?
Obviously Concord goes really well down here for us. Concord, in my opinion, doesn't make great wine. It can make okay wine, but it makes a very particular type of wine. Same thing, we have Muscadine, which is hugely popular now because of the medicinal benefits that people are seeing from it. Cancer, benefits and things like that. And really, Muscadine's only grown in the southeastern part of the United States, Georgia, North, South Carolina. And we can actually only grow it here in about our southeast region of our state. And those are American, Native American grape varietals.
So they're adapted to the climate.
They're adapted to the climate, but they have a particular flavor profile that comes out when you ferment it.
Right.
We also have hybrid grapes here, and that's a kind of a crossbreed between, European Vitis vinifera and the American species that grow fairly well here. Chardonnay, it's kind of a subspecies of Chardonnay. It's not quite as buttery and thick as pronounced as Chardonnay is, but it can be depending on how it's processed. Chamberson is another varietal that we grow a lot of around here. I personally enjoy it.
That's a red variety.
It is a red variety, but it when you're up in the northeast of the United States, it's produced very differently than we do down here.
Tell us more about
up,
that.
Up there, it's typically lighter, a lighter red. Okay. Easy drinking, not big, bold flavors with it. Down here, we have been putting it more into oak and treating it like a Pinot almost. So you have some of the delicate natures of the grape, but we're oaking it and bringing it darker and darker in, and then using it as a lot as a blending base grape as well. It also makes a fantastic rosé. So it's got a lot of versatility, and it grows fairly well around here.
Say the name of the grape again.
Chamberson.
Chamberson.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
You know, and there's a lot of other species around here too, but you know, for me, that's really kind of the one that I think's...
You know, I noticed in reading some of your promotional material that you have a couple vineyards that are actually growing Riesling and European grapes.
I'm trying.
Okay.
Yes. And their yields aren't as large as they'd like. And they're typically having to offset with imported fruit as well.
Okay. Imported from overseas?
No. From the United States. Usually, okay. You know, New York, Washington, okay. West Coast.
From another region.
Okay. It's really funny. You know, wine, we try to grow the fruit in the region that it's being produced because the best wine comes from the vineyard and you need to have control of both the vineyard and the winery.
Sure.
But consumers are very set on the seven big varietals, you know, Pinot Noir, Merlot, Cabernet, which of course the West Coast has really kind of done well with. Mm-hmm. So you'll sometimes see people pull stuff in just to offset the level of production they really need to have. We're talking kind of before this, you know, that, and I think we're about 1,200 acres shy where we need to be in terms of grape growing in the state of Tennessee to equal what our wineries would need. So 1,200 acres, that's a big offset of what needs to be brought in then to meet the demand.
That would be a lot of grapes.
It's a lot of grapes.
Yeah.
And it's not an overnight fix, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, you're 3 to 5 years to get your first usable harvest out of a grape, out of a grapevine. So you get a lot of time invested into it.
How many gallons of wine can a vineyard produce in an acre? That's variable.
It's kind of a loaded question.
What is the variable?
You know, I mean, it's species.
Right.
It's trellis type. So the trellis type is their system of how they're raising their vines. You know, you're somewhere between 5 to 8 tons per acre.
Of fruit. Okay.
But again, there's that variation of what you're growing, where you're growing, spacing, you know.
Sure.
Depending if you're going for a certain quality level versus quantity level, there's a lot of variables that go into that.
One of the things I've noticed on your website is that you all have organized the state into regions and you have set up wine trails. And I thought that was a terrific promotional idea.
The wine trails are actually the individual wineries themselves. They've kind okay. of, so just like my organization is a band together of the state.
Right.
Localized wineries have kind of banded together to form a wine trail, and there's 7 in the state right now.
Right.
And we have wineries and vineyards from Tri-Cities area all the way down to Memphis, and I've covered that distance in a week, and it's quite a bit. But wine trails are a great way for someone to kind of come out and see the potential for a certain varietal of fruit to be done many different ways.
Okay.
And for me personally, that's why I really love wine, because you can take that grape from a certain vineyard and give it to 5 different winemakers. You're going to get 5 different outcomes from that grape varietal. And it kind of makes it fun.
So interesting. Well, and people that are interested in just traveling around the state, there's lots of reasons to travel around Tennessee, but to go up into a region and just go around and sample a couple of those, it could be fun to do.
Yeah, it's really fun. And some of the guys have actually set up... you know, stone pizza ovens on their property as well, so you get this beautiful view of the vineyard. The guys at Cori Appolito are doing that right now, and Watauga Lake.
Now where? Okay, so say that. Okay, no, Watauga Lake.
You know where that one is?
Yes, way up east near Johnson City.
About an hour outside of Johnson City.
Yes, and beautiful country. They're growing grapes up there.
It looks like Tuscany. There's a Villanova Vineyards and Watauga Lake winery, and both up there. The winery itself is set in an old schoolhouse, which is kind of fun.
Okay.
The vineyard is a big wedding destination, but they do, you know, dinners and stuff out there all the time. But they're pretty much a stone's throw from North Carolina.
And what was the other one you mentioned?
There's a few of them. Cory Abuelito.
That's the one.
Yep. They are right on the border of Virginia. They're like okay. above, almost at Bristol.
Bristol, right.
Almost at Bristol. And they've got 7 acres planted out there, beautiful space, and right off the highway, beautiful rolling hills with the vineyards, and they've got a nice stone pizza oven, Lou Food Truck Nights and stuff. And a lot of the wineries across the state do, music and food and elements, so it makes it a fun weekend getaway because there's always something going on. And if they don't have food there, they'll typically bring in a local cafe or something to come do food. And it just makes it fun for a Saturday, Friday.
Excellent. Evening. All right, so begs the question, where can a listener buy Tennessee wines? What store in Nashville can you go to, or in Chattanooga can you go to buy Tennessee wines?
So the majority of the wineries are selling their wine at the winery. We're not too many of them are in retail for numerous reasons. We have the three-tiered system here, which makes it a challenge sometimes for smaller guys to actually get into the market.
All right, so that was the reason for my question, is to bring that to light. So I guess in some ways, maybe they're just not producing enough to make it a viable option to go into grocery stores or to other outlets.
Sometimes, but it's a three-tiered system, and this is throughout the United States. Different state laws have different restrictions on things, but you're basically giving up a two-thirds of what you would in revenue to go through into wholesale.
I see.
Because there's a certain amount that the retailer wants to sell it for, and in order to do that, you got to come down to a certain price point, and the wholesaler takes a certain percentage as well.
Sure.
And so you start looking at that, and if I'm going to give up 50% of my production for a third of the money, it doesn't always make sense, so it makes it challenging. We also, from a smaller supplier standpoint, it's very hard for us to compete with the Constellation brand, the wine brands, the Gallo wine group, who own hundreds of wine labels in their portfolio. And they've got a really good relationship with the wholesalers where, hey, 75% of your wine portfolio is made up of my product. Guess what? They're going to push.
So in order to get these wines, or even to become familiar with them, you almost have to go to the actual vineyards.
You really should anyway, because it's part of the experience.
Sure.
It's, wine and visiting a wine tasting room, it's about the experience. You get to hear the story about why Jim and Josh got into wine, why they've decided to take the past 20 years of their life and invested into creating this thing, this organic thing that some people like, some people don't. What kind of wine you drink is a very kind of subjective thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of putting yourself out there, and this is a passion I have. So it's fun to go visit and then purchase from them and kind of support the growth of a small business, because we're also a small business.
So can the Tennessee wineries do mail order?
They can.
Okay.
Almost all the wineries ship, at least within the state of Tennessee.
Okay.
A majority of them can ship outside of Tennessee as well.
Okay.
If you
get to liking one and you want to do business with them, you can do that over the internet.
You can do that over the
internet. Over the phone or
yep.
whatever.
Okay. And real simple and easy. Now, we are in some retail outlets. Don't get me wrong. There are liquor stores and grocery stores. A few guys are in Stonehouse.
Okay.
It's even in Sam's Club now.
Okay.
And I do encourage
you. Stonehouse is where?
Stonehouse is out in Crossville.
Okay.
And kind of fun, Faye Wheeler, who started the first winery, Highland Manor, is also the one that started Stonehouse, just a different model a few years later. But it's right off the highway in Crossville, which I just found out is also where the U.S. Chess Federation is located.
Well, I didn't know
in
that.
In Crossville, Tennessee. And it's so weird. Like, you go by and there's this billboard that says, U.S. Chess Federation. I'm like,
who knew? I didn't know.
Crossville, Tennessee. All right.
Well, that organization has been involved in getting their wine products into Tennessee State Park restaurants.
Stonehouse?
I think so.
They have, someone has Beans Creek.
Okay.
Beans Creek's pretty heavy. Yes, you can buy a bottle of wine in a state park.
Which is
great.
you know, my background in state parks, the thought of that, we were always like, no, this will never happen. You know, and you can buy liquor, you can buy, you know, a cocktail
right
at a state park now as well. So, but this is a good thing for them to be able to promote these Tennessee products.
It is. And to me, you know, we do a lot with Department of Ag, a lot with Pick Tennessee, because we are a Tennessee grown element. So we're Tennessee agriculture and we're a Tennessee product. So kind of wrapping those both up, I am a huge fan of all things Tennessee. This has been my home now since 2006. And, you know, I just enjoy it. You know, I've worked for some two iconic companies based here in Tennessee, and just I like to see another industry kind of grow. So,
well, fun. The again, the event that you're having, let's promote that one more time before we go.
Yep. It's our Sip Tennessee Wine Festival. It's at the Nashville Farmers Market on November 10th. Proceeds go to benefit the Friends of the Nashville Farmers Market. You can taste from 20 plus Tennessee wineries. You can buy bottles from them as well. So it's great stocking up for the holidays because Thanksgiving and Christmas are around the corner. So most of the wineries will have discounts on their wine. But you'll also be able to enjoy the market house just like you normally would, all the great food vendors that are inside the marketplace, the farmer's market. And they'll have some of their craft and artisan vendors out there as well.
Terrific. Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining me today. This has really been a pleasure to speak with you.
It's been great, Mark.
All right.